This week on the BOAG World Show, we're joined by Ling Lim to discuss her amazing journey and the incredible difference determination can make. This week's show is supported by Free Agent and me, because why shouldn't I advertise on my own show? Welcome to BOAGworld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul BOAG. Joining me as always is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you this morning?
Oh, I am joyous. It's not... You know me. I'm always joyous and positive.
Well, that's not always.
No. And we're also being joined by Ling. Hello, Ling. It's good to have you on the show.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, we haven't actually met ever or talked other than via a couple of emails, have we really?
No, we haven't, except for on Twitter, I think.
Yes, Twitter is the way that everybody meets. Now, you made a horrendous confession only moments ago that you've never listened to the podcast.
At least I'm honest.
Yeah, no, that's true, and I'll give you that. So, I apologize for what you're about to go through. It's just the way things work. Hey, this is a particularly exciting show, Marcus.
Really?
What do you mean, really? You say that with real hesitation.
It's an exciting show because of our wonderful guest. Is that it?
No, you're just a suck up.
I think I agree.
There you go.
See, it's an exciting show because... it's my birthday when this show goes out. So as people listen to it right now, it's my birthday.
And how old are you, Paul, on your
I am 44 years old.
All the fours.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Which puts me in a grumpy mood, I have to say, right? Because last year, 43, well, that's the meaning of life, isn't
42
it?
42 is the meaning of life.
Oh, really? Have I skipped the whole year without realising it?
According to Douglas Adams, anyway.
Yeah, well, exactly. And also, see, now, the reason I'm particularly bitter is because of you, Ling, right? You're making me bitter about my birthday. And the reason is because you have, like, got this amazing story of all this kind of big life-changing stuff that you've done, which we're going to get into later in the show. Can I ask, without, you shouldn't ask a lady this, can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, go ahead.
How old are you?
I am 29.
29. What have I been doing with my life?
Well, you have a huge successful podcast. I don't have that.
Well, you say that, but for all you know, nobody listens to this podcast. Yeah,
you don't, Ling.
Yeah.
So I was planning to start.
You won't listen.
We're not going to let you get away with that. For the rest of the show, we're going to harass you over that.
About that. Oh. I just love it.
So we're going to... What happened? Let me... Because, Marcus, you don't even know this.
No,
you don't know.
I was just thinking that I can't even remember being 29.
Well, yeah. What was I
How
doing?
How old are you, Marcus?
I'm 49.
You're 20 years 20 older.
20 years older. There you go.
But you've at least lived the life.
If it all ended tomorrow, I wouldn't complain. Well, yeah. I wouldn't be able to complain, obviously. But if I could complain, I wouldn't.
Because what you don't know, Ling, about Marcus, I have to get into every show at every opportunity, is that Marcus used to be a pop star. Like
really?
a proper pop star. A travel around the world, platinum records. You know, all the rest of it. Hey, I've got a question, Marcus. Ling comes from Singapore. Did you ever play in Singapore?
Yes. Well, we went to Singapore just to do sort of, you know, radio shows and TV shows and that kind of thing. We never played live there, but I definitely went out there and did some promo type stuff, yeah. In the late 80s. Long, long time ago.
How old were you in the late 80s, Ling?
Me? I was just born.
I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, thanks for that, Paul. But yes, right. I went there. with the so band.
Anyway, the Ling's age is nothing to do with what we're talking about on the show. It's just that because I'm feeling old today, I thought I'd pick on him. I'm sorry. Marcus, you must be wondering why Ling's on the show, because I've already established she doesn't listen to the podcast and we've never spoken before. So let me give you
do that
a little bit of background, and the listener as well, the single listener that we're down to. So basically, I posted on Twitter that we were doing a season about passion and motivation and success and that kind of stuff, and whether anybody fancied coming on to the show to talk about it. And Ling dropped me the most fascinating email of quite an interesting journey that she's been on. And I thought, that's going to make a great show, looking at the subject of determination and direction and that kind of stuff. So we got all that to come in the show.
Mm.
But there's something far more important that I need to talk about first.
What, even more important than your birthday?
No, not more important than that. I mean, if people want to send me presents, they can do. I'm just saying.
Okay. What?
What's more important?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to talk about the sponsors, obviously.
Oh, really?
Do you not consider that more important?
That's not what you were going to talk about. I don't believe you.
Yeah, it was.
We're not at the time in the show for the sponsors yet, so there's something else that's bugging you.
Yeah, there might be. What? I've come to the conclusion that I don't love Apple anymore.
I don't believe that for a minute.
I'm really sad.
What? Why?
Because I don't like my iPad Pro. It's a crap piece of technology.
Really?
There, I've said it. Ling, do you have one before I completely
say it? I don't have a Pro. I have an iPad from years ago that I never use.
Ah, so what do you, what's your go-to kind of machine?
Just my phone.
Just your phone. What phone is it?
iPhone 6.
Not the 6 Plus, the 6.
Not the Plus.
Okay.
Me too.
Well, I'm a little girl. Size.
Oh, are you? The 6 would be too, 6 Plus would be too big for your hand.
Too big for me. Yeah.
So just as it's interesting, just as we're recording this, in a few minutes' time, because we record a week earlier, there's about to be a keynote, an Apple keynote, where they're going to probably announce a smaller iPhone. Will you go for the smaller one?
No. You like? Are they really going to announce that? That's so weird.
Well, that's what they reckon. They're going to go back down to the old, you know, iPhone 4 size.
No.
You don't believe
it? Once you go big, it's hard to go back small.
I'm sure there's an innuendo. Going to leave it.
Yeah, let's don't go there, Paul.
So yeah, no, I was really disappointed because the Pro was going to be my go-to machine because I travel a lot for like conferences and stuff like that. And it's just rubbish. It just doesn't work. You need a proper operating system. You can't have a Pro device, a professional device with running iOS. It doesn't work. So I'm annoyed about that. But I've written a whole post on it, so I'm not going to rant here.
No, right. Well, just give us the breakdown of why.
Well, I mean, the big thing is you've got no...
No files.
No files, which in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing, except there's so much that is reliant on file systems. Even things like, you know, uploading files to the internet, you know, or any web app you use. You can't use it because there's no decent file. And yeah, you can connect to Dropbox and iCloud, but it's just a faff. And all the time you keep going, you know, if I had a laptop, this would be so much easier. And things like as well, the fact that all of the apps that you get are just not quite as good as the desktop versions. Just to give you an idea, right? Mm-hmm. In Keynote, okay. In Keynote, normally you have a presenter mode, don't you? Where it shows you your notes, it shows you the slide you're currently on and the upcoming slide, right? What's next?
Very useful.
Mm-hmm. Very useful. Everybody wants that. Now, you see, originally they created the Keynote app on the iOS for an iPhone or a normal size iPad. So they were a bit short on space. So you can either have the current slide and the next slide, or you can have the current slide and your notes, or you can have the next slide and your notes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that's not enough. You need all three, and you've got the space on an iPad Pro to do it. But they don't. But they haven't, because they're not designed. It's an afterthought. The whole thing is an afterthought. It's like, ooh, there's a gap in the market we need to fill, so we're gonna create an iPad Pro and not really think through the experience. I've written a hot post on there, not thinking through the user experience of the iPad Pro.
Are you the only person that thinks this?
No.
So
everyone agrees with me.
I'm not sure. I think you might be lying again, Paul.
I could be.
Okay. But if that was true, then they might change it and improve it.
They might do, and I hope they do, because I just, yeah, it's really, it's an interesting thing. And I tell you what it's thrown up in my mind is a quite an interesting thing about buyer's remorse and choice paralysis in particular. So, for example, you know, when I was really torn about what I should get. I wanted a lightweight machine for when I travel around a lot. Okay. But actually, these days, that's quite a complicated decision, even if you narrow it down just to Apple. Do you get the iPad Pro? Do you get the MacBook 12-inch? Do you get the MacBook Air 11-inch or the Air 13-inch? You know, there's so many different options. And it's interesting because when Steve Jobs returned to the company in 90, whatever it was, they had exactly the same problem where they had too many options, and he narrowed it down to four devices, right? Two desktop, two laptops. So a consumer desktop, a consumer laptop, and a professional desktop, and a professional laptop. And he got rid of everything else. I think they're going down the same road, and it's bad. So anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to, well, I will, Meg, who does the transcriptions, will put a link in the show notes to my rant about this. But there you go. Let's talk about the sponsors, and then we'll talk to Ling, because Ling's sitting there very quietly.
Yes.
While we
sitting
rant.
And laughing.
I'm used to that. It happens a lot. Okay, so let's talk about sponsors. Free Agent supported the entire season of the podcast, and I'm so grateful to them for doing that. I use Free Agent all the time. It's my go-to app in terms of managing my expenses and my accounts and my all of the financial related stuff relating to my business. And one of the things that I love about Free Agent is the way that it makes managing expenses easy. So you can easily add expenses from the mobile app that comes with it. And that includes now the ability to attach receipts from your camera roll, from Dropbox, from iCloud Drive, or anywhere else that you might want to. So it means that you're no longer reliant on the web app for doing those expense claims. You can link an expense to a project. You can claim mileage. And the other great thing is it remembers all the details about your mileage. So it works out how much you can claim back based on your engine type and engine size and all those kinds of things. You can also, in the web app, if you've got multiple members, employees, they can all use the mobile app to claim their expenses. And then you can review and pay those expenses through the web app. You can see your expenses based on per person or per project, and because your expenses get assigned to a project if you want them to. And it makes it really easy to pay and manage your expenses. So if you want to check that out, that's just one. We've talked about a lot of the other cool things with Free Agent over the season. If you want to check them out and get a 30-day free trial, you can do so by going to boagworld.com/freeagent. And the thing I love about their 30-day free trial, you don't have to enter a credit card, which always annoys the hell out of me. Oh yeah, we'll give you 30 days and then we'll start charging your card whether you want me to or not. You could also earn referrals as well from Free Agent. So if you recommend it to friends and they sign up for it, then you get a percentage off. And that means you can actually get into the situation where Free Agent are paying you to use their product because you've got so much money off. How cool is that? Anyway. Right. So, Ling.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for putting up with the waffle that goes at the beginning of the show.
All of the ramble is now out of the way.
It was very entertaining.
Yeah, we get serious at this point. Okay, so Ling, thank you so much for emailing me over this. It was absolutely great. I think what what Marcus needs and what everybody else listening needs is if you could kind of give us the same summary you gave me via email, because it's an impressive journey that you've been on, and just kind of tell us what happened to you and how you've ended up where you are.
Okay. So just to give a quick summary, I was originally an architect from Singapore. I worked as an architect in part of a award-winning architectural design team in a big international firm for a couple of years. But I hated my job and my life back home. So one day I decided to make a change. I quit my job and I bought a ticket to New York. And I traveled around the US for a few months and ended up in San Francisco. It then took me about 6 months of relentless job hunt before I found a UX internship. I'm not sure if the listeners or you guys are aware, but staying in the US is a very difficult process for any foreigner. I was at first on 2 tourist visas and then a training visa with my internship company. But when that one expired, I had to find another way to stay. And the working visa here is a lottery-based system, so I wasn't lucky enough to get that. In the end, my only solution was to marry someone, which I was not going to do.
It's a little extreme. But
yeah. Or I had to rise to the top of my career to stay. So I started to give talks. I contributed articles to major UX publications. I spoke at events like GMIC, Silicon Valley, events hosted by AIGA. And I mentored students at Tradecraft, AIGA student chapter, UX night events, buildup.vc, designers guild. And about 4 months ago, I was finally awarded my visa to stay based on extraordinary achievement.
Excellent.
I think what got me, I mean, there's so much about, I think you've played it down more than you did in the email, but there were bits of it that blew my mind. For a start, that UX intern was an unpaid position, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So you started off not earning any money. So I'm going to get into all of that in a moment. But also you just kind of uprooted. The first question, right? Let's start from the beginning, work through it systematically. First of all, why did you decide to move away from what was obviously a very successful career in architecture? You know, things were going well. Why did you hate it so much? What was wrong there?
So I was working for a huge architectural firm and we mainly dealt with commercial projects. So I was designing commercial shopping malls, mixed residential projects. And these are by really big developers and they usually have an idea of how it's going to look. And they just wanted you to replicate templates and build fast so they're able to sell fast. There wasn't a lot of room for creativity, which was fine because I was learning new things that you need to know to be a good architect. But I couldn't help but miss the kind of architecture that I really loved in school. In school, I always use architecture as a tool to highlight or to solve urban and social issues. And that's what I wanted to do in life too. But I know I wasn't going to do that in real life.
So, I mean, how long had you spent studying to become an architect?
I did 3 years in polytechnic and 4 years in, no, 3 more years in undergraduate school and 1 year in graduate school.
It sounds very similar to in the UK. It's a long process.
It's really long.
So you went through all of that and then at the end went, nah. That's quite brave to do that, to just go, I've gone through this whole process, I'm not going to do that now.
I guess the question that keeps floating around my mind is, I can understand that you didn't like the job you had in Singapore, but why change to UX? Why not try and get a job in architecture in the States or somewhere else?
I did try.
Okay.
But I also know that it would have the same problems. I know that the kind of architecture that I really want to work on are things that cannot be built.
Fair enough.
And I could design very conceptual stuff and or become a professor, but I didn't want to teach. I wanted to make true impact, design things that actually will exist.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. So when you quit the job, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, talk us through that process, your thought process of doing that. I mean, was it a spur of the moment thing? Had you planned to quit it? Did you know what you were going to do when you quit it? What went on there?
So I stayed in that job for a little bit over 2 years, and I hated it from the very beginning, the first 2 weeks. So I remember I was crying because my supervisor was really hard on me, and every other week I was thinking, I am supposed to love this. I am supposed to love being an architect. Why am I not loving this? I don't get it. But I kept it because I have, you know, that's what everyone do in Singapore, in my opinion. You keep your desk job, you climb up the ladder, and you rarely do anything outside of the safe conventional route. So I stayed there for over 2 years. And then one day I'm just like, no, can't do this anymore. If I leave, my life might change for the worse. I don't know. I have no idea. But if I stay, it's going to be the same. It's going to be the same thing that I hate.
Mm. And it's a big thing to do, to just suddenly go, that's it. And so I presume you went and handed in your resignation. At that point, did you have a plan? Did you know you were going to go off traveling, or did you have any inclination that you might end up at doing user experience at that point? What did the future hold in your head?
I didn't really have a plan. All I knew was which cities I was going to visit in the US.
Okay.
I planned the number of days I was going to be in each city for the first month, but that was it. Everything else I winged.
Right. Okay. And were you, what kind of, this wasn't one of the questions that I prepared, but I've just thought of it, and it's one I do want to ask. What did other people think of you? Family, for example. Do you have family in Singapore?
And yes.
So what did they think? You were incredibly stupid? No offense.
I mean, yeah. No, they did think I was incredibly stupid. Particularly my family.
Yeah.
Because it's my culture that you stay with your family until you get married.
Oh, okay.
And it's very different here in the US. I don't know how it's like in the UK, but in the US, you know, everyone leaves when they're 18. They just go far away from their parents. But it's not like that in Singapore. You basically stay with your family till you get married. It kind of suggests that you're not close to your family, or you don't love them if you leave. So it was hard for my family to accept that I'm going, not because I don't love them, but I just am not happy in Singapore.
So was the problem not just the job? It was also this desire to get out of Singapore and see the world a bit?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. My mom has always said that when I was younger, that she thought if I ever had the chance to leave, I wouldn't go back.
Right.
So I guess she was right.
Is that because you don't like Singapore, or because you like, there's such a big world and you want to get out there and see it?
I would say both.
Yeah.
Since I grew up in Singapore, I was tired of it. And I have lived in, I lived in Paris for a bit when I was like 22. And then I've also spent a couple months in Australia. So at that time I was like, America's the most obvious place that I should be that I have never been.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to try it out.
Fair enough. Okay, so, I mean, the obvious thing would have been to go traveling for a little bit, you know, see a bit of America, and then go back to Singapore and kickstart your career again.
Right.
What happened that prevented that?
Yeah, that's exactly what my dad said.
Well, I am a dad, so.
Yeah, he said, you can just travel if you want to see the world. You don't have to stay there.
Yeah.
But I guess the other reason was that I found that I have the freedom, or everyone has the freedom here, to be able to experiment with career choices. And there's a support system for it, simply because everyone else is like that. Everyone here is generally very accepting of new and radical ideas, and people change career paths all the time, and no one raises an eyebrow. But if I were to do that in Singapore, as proven, everyone is questioning you. Why would you do that? You spent 8 years in architecture school. Aren't you going to regret that? Such a waste of your education. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think we're, in Britain, we're somewhere in between that, aren't we, Marcus? Because that did go through my head. Well, you spent all that time going to you know, if I was your parents that funded you through architectural school, and now you're not doing it. Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
So we're maybe a bit more like it than America. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've always thought of.
You've switched career for a pastime, Marcus. So. Well,
yeah, through necessity, Paul. Though that's a different thing. I've always thought of as America being more conservative than the UK. But I guess if you're on the coast, if you're in New York and you're in San Francisco, then they're probably more sort of free thinking places than we are. It depends on where you are in the country, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if you change career paths here, I don't know. Let's say if you train to be a doctor, which would take many, many years, and you decided that it wasn't for you, I think people would question it and say, are you sure about that? And if you had a strong enough kind of, feeling in your heart that it just wasn't for you, I think family and friends would support you here. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, they would actually. Mm. You're right. Okay. So you've gone off traveling. We've now established why you're not going to be turning around and going back to Singapore.
Can I just jump in? Sorry.
Yeah, go on. Go on.
When you went to the States, did you have any friends or family that you were going to visit?
No, none.
Because that just scares the life out of me. So you got a ticket to New York on your own. You get up, you walk out of JFK, wherever you landed, and what am I going to do next? So that's that's so brave.
And you were traveling by yourself as well. Yeah. You weren't traveling with other people.
Yeah.
My word. Okay. So. You've done your month of traveling around, and you've gone to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Now, and what I'm trying to work out which came first, right? Did you fall in love with San Francisco and go, I need a job that I could do in San Francisco? Oh, it's all, internet startups here. I'm sure I could do something in that world. Or did you go, I want to do something in UX, therefore I will go to San Francisco? Does that make sense? Both.
Yes, I would say both. Because when I was in New York, I happened to have a chance to speak to someone with a UX opening. And that opened my eye to that part of the world, of the tech world. And after traveling for a month, I ended up in San Francisco, and it was in part that I was so sick of traveling that I stayed for a little bit. And when I stayed, I realized that, this place has full of opportunities, tons of them, especially in the tech world. And I was lucky that architecture is extremely broad. And with that degree, anyone can go into like landscape architecture, interior design, industrial design, production design, game design, and of course UX design. So to be completely honest, I was open to all of the above. And I believe that if production design, for example, came up before UX, I would have taken it too.
Right.
But given that San Francisco was the city that I ended up in, and I fell in love with it, and there was an abundance of tech jobs, UX made the most sense for me to get into at that time. And not just because of that, but going back to before what I said about trying to make impact, I feel that it was the area that I can make the most impact, given that it was growing so rapidly.
Mm. So, yeah, because it's this huge growth area, and because it's, it touches on pretty much most of our interactions most of the day are in some way user experience related. So I completely get that. And that's really interesting. Has that been in you, that desire to kind of have an impact and change the world. That's been in you since university times, one presumes.
Yes.
Right. So would you describe yourself as quite a driven kind of person?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I get that impression. I mean, you're also very sporty, aren't you? You do a lot of is it powerlifting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. She's an overachiever, Marcus. I'm very out of my league in this whole conversation now. You know, so
you
that's
flatter fine. Me.
Right. So you've decided. So you've had your eyes opened a bit to UX in New York. You've got to San Francisco, knackered, had enough of traveling. Going to have a look. So you start looking for jobs that, well, from the sounds of it, you've been looking for jobs the entire time.
In a way, I was traveling and keeping my eye open for something.
So it's already gone through your head that you might stay.
Yeah. Well, yes. I know I wasn't going to go back. I don't know where I would be.
Right. Okay. And you have picked one of the hardest countries in the world to stay in. Yeah. Did that not occur to you at any point?
It has many, many times. But I guess I am always up for a challenge.
Yeah, I can tell. Right. So you've started looking for a job in San Francisco. Now, that didn't sound like it happened overnight. Now, I was under the impression that, you know, if you stood in the middle of, what is it, Union Square in San Francisco and said, I'm interested in a job in UX, people fight to get you. So what happened there? Was am I delusional on that, or were you just really rubbish? How long did it take, and what happened?
It took me maybe 6 months. I sent out hundreds of emails. I'm not even exaggerating. And I didn't get a response back for most of them. I think that demand is high, but I also think that as a foreigner, a lot of people read that and will not respond. Even in a lot of job openings, it's stated must have valid working visa or must be American citizen.
Yeah.
Because no employer wants to go through the trouble of sponsoring your visa. Most don't. So, it did take me 6 months, and I knew I had to start somewhere. So I took up a free internship. I worked for free for an internship. I think it seemed like I took a setback doing that. Don't get me started on what my parents said. But I believe that I was taking a step forward at a time in finding what I really wanted to do, because I know I had to start somewhere, and I know that no employer is just going to willingly sponsor my visa without knowing what I'm capable of doing first.
So you took another, this one, I was going to say another calculated risk, but I'm not sure there was much calculated about the first step of giving up the job. But this feels to me as a much more considered step on your part of, I'm going to get an internship. And the way you put it in your email is you're going to make yourself indispensable, right? Mm. How did you do that? Because there are a lot of people listening to this who are students, okay? And, you know, they're going to be looking for their new job relatively soon, actually. What are we in now? So, we're coming up to the summer break. You know, end of their studies, they're going to start looking for a job. They might have to take an internship to get going. How do you make yourself indispensable to the point, not only where they're willing to start paying for you, but jump through the hoops of getting a visa for you, which I know is a nightmare?
Mm-hmm. You just have to believe, I know it sounds very cliche, but you just have to go to the job and believe that you are good. Yeah. And start taking initiatives and doing everything that you think would be good for the company, even if it's outside your scope. And the good thing about startups is that you wear many hats and everyone is always willing to listen to your new ideas. So you can even pitch an idea for marketing or for business, and everything that you think would help the company, you feel free to say. I guess I'm lucky to find a company for my internship where my co-founders are not Americans.
So ah, okay.
They understood the struggle, and they were willing to help me. But outside of that, it was also very important to me to create my online presence, and they know that, like my coworkers and my co-founders know that I was trying really hard to find a place in the UX world in Silicon Valley. And I was writing articles and I was getting the company's name out too, because I was participating outside of my comfort zone and mentoring students based on, you know, my position in the company. So all these add up to the value that I was giving to my company.
You're right when you say it's about adding value, isn't it? You know, and being seen to add value in terms of the key thing you said there that stuck with me is that being proactive, and suggesting things, even if you've not been asked to do them, even if they're not actually within your remit, but to always be full of ideas and suggestions and enthusiasm and that kind of stuff. It goes so far, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can 100%. Go too far, though. You can be. it depends on how informed your ideas are. If you're continually, not you, but if one continually provides ideas that really aren't of any value, then you're going to become annoying. But I think there's a balance there. You've got to know what you're talking about as well as.
I agree, Marcus, but I think it's also how you present those ideas and how precious you are over them. It's like, because I'm thinking back to some employees that we've had over the time, and I never resented anyone having an idea. My problem only ever came is if they wouldn't bloody let go of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If, you know, we said, no, that's not right for us now, and they go on and on and on and push and push and push. That's where it gets annoying, is it not?
You have to find the right balance.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the fact that you've had industry experience of working with people and in quite a difficult environment for 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, you've kind of developed a lot of those skills already, haven't you, really?
I think yes, but I also think a lot of it comes from traveling talking to different people. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say that my special design superpower is travel.
Yeah.
Because of traveling, I have met so many different people and interacted with so many of them. And it's crazy how different people are and how different they use certain things or the kind of things that's common sense to them that isn't common sense to me. So if you come from a place understanding that everyone is going to perceive things differently, you tend to communicate in a different way where you seem very open and earnest and open to ideas.
Mm. Yeah.
It's quite similar to my experience going back to when I was in the band. We were all really young, but we were kind of thrust into this situation of having to do interviews on television and radio and things like that. And we kind of did it, and I think we were reasonably good at it. But I've always said that that's where I learned how to sell. And it's the same kind of thing. It's just about how to deal with that kind of communication where you've got to, you know, stand up and say your piece about you, who you are or what it is, whatever it is you're trying to sell, that kind of thing. So, I get that bit completely. That's cool.
Right.
I tell you the other thing with the traveling as well is that, like you say, it exposes you to lots of different people, which I think in the Valley in particular is quite necessary because there is this very tight-knit tech community there, you know, who spend so much time with one another, talking to other people from other startups about, you know, other UX things, that you can end up, if you're not careful, and this doesn't just apply in the Valley, it applies anywhere where there's strong communities of UX people, that you become quite insular. You're not exposed to the ordinary kind of everyday, you know, tech interactions that you know people have. For example, you know, it's invaluable to me that I go out to the pub with a guy who's a mechanic who just thinks that what I do is ridiculous and stupid. You know,
it's not
and
real.
I think,
yeah.
Yeah. You need people like that in your life. Do you know what I mean? That kind of put it all in perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So you've had a two-pronged attack, as I see it here, to get your visa. and to become, you know, get into this UX world. On one hand, it was to become indispensable to the company at which you worked. But there was also a need to build a reputation that that allowed you, you needed that to become, to get a visa. What, how was that exactly? How does that work?
So the visa that I got was the O1 visa, and it's meant for people with extraordinary achievement. And there were several categories that you have to fulfill. Basically, you either, so if you have a Nobel Prize, for example, you don't need to fulfill any other categories.
Okay.
You just get it.
Yeah.
But if you don't, you need to be the author of publications for major publications, and you need to be a member of distinguished organizations. You need to be a mentor. You need to just have awards and many things under your name.
Okay. So yeah. Do you think this visa, the kind of aim of having to get this visa, do you think that actually helped to propel your career because it motivated you to do those kinds of things? Or are you the kind of person that would have gone ahead and done it anyway?
I think it definitely helped. I think if I were to have gotten the first visa, which required me to do nothing except have luck, I probably wouldn't have done as much as I have in 5 months. Maybe I would have done the same thing in 3 years, but not 5 months.
And so there's a follow-up question now then, which is, now you have your visa, do you think you'll back off a little bit from that stuff? Because it must be knackering.
Yeah, it was really tiring. Right after I gotten it, I still have people from the publications that I wrote for write me, asking me to continue writing for them. And I had a thought that I didn't want to do it anymore because I was so tired of hustling so hard.
Yeah.
But I kept going. I wouldn't be talking on this show if I didn't keep going.
Oh, yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
I guess it's not, it's tiring, but also I understand that in order to grow, you need to keep doing things that make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And also it's about networking and, you know, personal brand building and all those other kind of words that we don't like to talk about too much because it sounds a bit embarrassing, but we all have to do it to some degree, don't we, really?
Exactly. And I always feel good about myself after it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So are you one of these people, do you think, that constantly, you know, find something that makes you uncomfortable and then have to do it?
It seems to be the case.
So sadomasochistic, basically. Fair enough. Okay.
Always chasing after something.
Fair enough. That's good. That's good. See, I'm terrible about that. I'm somebody that, like, I just stick to the things that I know well.
That's just a sign of your age, Paul.
Is it?
I remember, yeah, when I was 29, I was quite driven and wanted to do all sorts of things.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I suppose I do. Yeah,
yeah, you did. It's just, this is what you have to look forward to, Ling.
Oh,
you just become kind of tired of everything. So I will be boring in my 40s.
Yeah, just don't get old. Yeah. It sucks.
I think it's what happens
actually
to everyone.
It doesn't. I love it. But anyway. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, so let's just briefly recap. Take stock of where we're at. So you quit your good job in Singapore. You set off really not knowing what you wanted to do or where you were going beyond about a month's worth of a bit of traveling around America. You kind of stumbled it through the odd conversation in New York into this world of UX and realized that actually some of your skills as an architect were transferable into this new kind of role. You got to San Francisco, you decided that you loved it, settled down, tried to settle down there, had to push hard to get a job. Nobody was interested, so you went for a free internship that would then become indispensable in that company, so you could apply for a visa. But to apply for the visa, you also needed to become a respected and, you know, outstanding individual or whatever the phrase is. Right, so easy, no problem. All right,
very easy.
Yeah, no problem. So what advice? I mean, that is quite an impressive story. The question is, there are other people. There are people right now that are sitting listening to this. And are going, well, I'm miserable in my job and I'd love to travel the world. but, you know, stuff, you know, reasons. I've got reasons why it doesn't happen. What would you say to them? What piece of advice would you give somebody who, you know, wants to make that kind of change but is hesitant to do so? And don't just say, go for it. I want something tangible that they can encourage them. No pressure.
Yeah, I've always had friends coming to me from Singapore and saying things like, oh, I really envy your life. I wish I can do the same. And I'm just sitting here thinking, you can.
Yeah.
I guess that's similar to saying go for it. But
it is really.
if your journey is, for the listeners, if your journey is going to be anything like mine, it's going to be very frustrating. And you are going to feel very lonely at times. You will want to give up. I definitely thought about giving up. But one thing that stopped me was understanding why I wanted to change in the first place. Mm. I knew that if I gave up, I would be going back to the same old life I had. And maybe your life sucks. Maybe it's not that bad, but it's just not great. But whatever it is, you want to change because for whatever reason, that life is not good enough for you right now. So I kept that in mind when I moved forward. And even when I got unsure about what I was doing, I was sure about why I was doing it. And that was enough to stop me from going back.
That's really good. Yeah, I like that idea of you've got to know why you're doing what you're doing. Because I look at my own situation. You know, I guess only about a year and a bit ago, Marcus, I did something fairly radical, didn't I, if you think about it. You know, where I walked up, Ling, you probably don't know, is I used to run a web design agency with Marcus and another guy, which I did for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year and a half ago, I abandoned them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I said, no, I want to, you know, set up by myself. I want to do my own thing. And having clear in my mind why I was doing that really has helped since. To go, well, okay, because there have been times, I've said to Marcus before, there have been times I've gone, oh, what have I done? You know, is this the right thing? But having a clear vision in my mind of why I've done it, that, you know, what made me make that decision helps to remind me, no, if I went back to where I was, I wouldn't have what I'm aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, isn't it, you're getting at?
Right, you're still adventurous at your age.
Yeah, perhaps I am. Yeah, I've still got a bit of it in me. That's good.
Yeah.
So, and part of, actually, interestingly, part of the reason why I did what I did was because I wanted to travel more. And my lifestyle now allows me to do that. So, so yeah, I've got the wanderlust as well. So there you go. Okay, looking back at what you've done. Now, bearing in mind, it's worked out well for you. But looking back, do you think you were brave, stupid, or something else?
I definitely don't think that I was stupid. I was definitely very scared. But every time I look back, I get very moved by myself for everything I have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were definitely a lot of mistakes along the way. But I think that those mistakes contribute to the magic of the journey, and it adds a deep sense of gratitude for my life here today.
Yeah.
That I think I'm very grateful to have that sense of gratitude, if that makes sense. It just makes every day better.
I like that. The mistakes add to the magic of the journey. What a great line. That needs to go on some inspirational poster with a picture of a kitten hanging on.
It's tweet-worthy.
Tweet-worthy, yeah, that's it, yeah. So talking of mistakes, what mistakes do you think you made in hindsight that maybe you would have done differently? I mean, obviously, you know, like you say, the mistakes add to the journey, but I'm interested in what you would have done differently.
I would have gotten my parents' acceptance earlier.
Right.
Yeah, I initially just shrug it off and I would just say, stop bothering me, let me be happy, whatever. But it took me a year and a half coming here before I realized that their acceptance means a lot to me.
Yeah.
It's something that's always at the back of my head as I was moving forward, that if anything were to happen to them while I'm here, like I would forever be regretful of not fixing that. So I called them and I said very nicely and with full of love that it has nothing to do with my love for them. I love them all the same. I just need to do this, and it would mean a great deal to me if they would be accepting and supportive of me. And then it was okay.
Yeah, that's lovely. Mm. I think as regrets go, that's a pretty good one to have. That put your family higher on the list of the agenda. But it's really difficult, isn't it, to get that balance? I remember. To share a similar story, and I'm sure he won't mind me sharing it. When we set up Headscape right in the early days, we came out of the dot-com bubble, and we set up immediately after that. And it was the three, so myself, Marcus, Chris, and a guy called Lee. Mm. And we were going to set this up together. And Lee had been offered a job elsewhere. And his family said, what are you thinking? Well, take the job elsewhere because that's, it's safe, it's safe and stable. You don't know what's going to happen with this new company. You don't know whether it's going to survive. And he ended up doing that, taking the safe option, mainly to please his family. Because, he wanted to do this with us, but they didn't know us. We were an unknown entity to him. And, he ended up massively regretting it, and he ended up becoming an employee of the company. So it kind of worked itself out, and he's still working with Headscape today. But, there was a missed opportunity there because he ended up placing his family over maybe his own happiness in that situation. So it's a difficult balance to get, isn't it?
Definitely. You just have to communicate communicate that you love them and it's nothing to do with them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And personally, I'll be very excited when my boy decides to bog off and I can go on holiday and do what I want when I want without having to worry about him.
That's a long way off, Paul.
Yeah, I've got ages yet, haven't I? Right. So one last question before we wrap up, because we really should. What do you think is the kind of secret of your success for these kinds of big changes? Is it your determination? Is it your kind of devil may care attitude? What has been the real thing that you've kind of, time to brag a bit. What's the thing that you think you've done really well here?
So my favorite word in the English dictionary is relentless.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful word. If you believe in something, you should go after it relentlessly. I think that I also believe in the idea that you don't have to be the person you were yesterday and you can recreate yourself at any time you want. So I think my secret is I think about the person that I want to be and I choose to become that person. You can think about it in a very general sense, but I find that an easier way to break it down would be to start with little questions for yourself whenever an opportunity arises. Things like, do I want to be accomplished enough to speak at a mobile conference? And if the answer is yes, I become that person who is accomplished enough to speak. And like when you send that tweet out, who wants to talk on my show? I ask myself, do I want to be the person who is good enough to be a guest on your show?
No. I think that is just a brilliant way to end this discussion. The idea of being relentless and that you can become the person you want to be. I know it does sound a little bit kind of cliche, it is so true. That is so true and so encouraging. Oh, thank you, Lynn. That was just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So
thank
enjoyed
you, it was
that.
My pleasure.
Right. So we're going to do one more sponsor, which is a bit of a weird one, right? I've decided I'm sponsoring my own podcast.
Can't believe you're doing this, Paul.
Well, What?
You never had me talking about Headscape on here. Oh, hang on.
Yeah, exactly. Last season you spoke about Headscape. So I figured I'll talk about, we have two sponsored slots in the show, and I had a couple that I just hadn't filled for whatever reason. I hadn't got around to chasing people, etc. So I thought I'll talk about what I do, because nobody actually understands what I do, because it's very confusing. Everybody just thinks I record podcasts and sit around on my ass. But actually, there are kind of four things that I do. I'm going to talk about two this week and two next week. So the two things I want to talk about this week are strategy and cultural change. Okay, so I call myself a user experience consultant, because user experience is a lot more than just user interfaces. A big part of it is to do with your strategy and direction as a company, and the kind of cultural changes that you need to be making in order to become a company that can create an outstanding customer experience. So from the strategy side of things, I'm spending a lot of time looking at how people can take digital tools and use it to improve the user experience. So this typically consists of various discovery phases, where I do a lot of research, consultation phases, where I speak to stakeholders and users, obviously, recommendation stage, where I'm writing strategies, but also longer term roadmaps that establish your direction. A lot of the work that I'm doing in strategy these days is around building business cases for change, business cases that you can take to management to get them and encourage them to start investing in user experience and digital. The other aspect that I want to concentrate on today is that of cultural change. And that is mainly around governance, which is things like creating a playbook or a service manual of how you operate, standard operating procedures that encourage user experience and bake it into the organization. Then there's kind of resourcing and structure, so how you resource user experience and digital, and how you structure your organization to be able to accommodate that. I do a lot of training, but I'm going to talk about that more next week. And then a lot of kind of internal comms campaigns of how do you disseminate to the organization that kind of best practice in user experience design. I really enjoy my job. It's a great job. And if you want to find out more about it, you can do so at boagworks.com. All right, so that is pretty much it, except for Marcus's joke. See, now... Ling.
She doesn't stand a chance of understanding what this joke's going to be about, but there you go.
Oh, is it a really English-specific joke as well?
Well, and an age thing as well.
Okay, so just pretend to laugh at the appropriate moment. Go on then, Marcus.
Okay, it's only a short one. I'm handing out 80s CDs to every floor in my office block.
What's a CD?
You know. I know what's a CD.
You're not that young. Yeah. Sorry. Right,
so no.
Handing out 80 CDs to every floor in my office block. So far, I've got to level 42.
That is good. See, that's funny. But Litton, that's not a clue.
Level 42 were an 80s band. There you go. If you have to explain it doesn't work.
If you needed that joke explaining to you, congratulations, you still have
very
your
young.
Youth. Yes. Right, so that's it. Next week, you'll be pleased to know, Marcus, we've got an old codger joining us.
Excellent.
On the show. Andy Clark is coming on, who's good. Older than both of us, I think.
Yes,
which is remarkable.
Yeah, he moans more as well. I look forward to it.
Although he's fitter than both of us.
Yeah, well,
he's like almost as enthusiastic as Ling with his gym and his body building stuff.
It's
he's really into
a
it.
Fad. But I've got to save that until I'm speaking to
him. You stop being mean to him. So, and he's going to talk about, or together we're going to talk about, what happens when motivation evaporates, which I think that happened with my gym membership. So that'll be you.
It might be quite a lengthy show next week.
It could be.
If I can be bothered to turn up.
It's just going to be a lot of moaning, isn't it, basically. All right, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Lynn, for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Come on.